Hello students, welcome to chapter number 6, chapter on training and development. We are going to look at training and development function from an international context today. So by and large, why is training development function so important? Primarily because of several reasons. This is the only function where the individuals get their improvement done. They get an opportunity to improve on their skills, the functional skills, the technical skills. They get a scope for improvement, scope for development. The moment the individual develops, they also take their respective organization to the next level, which is why training and development is, you know, one of the most important functions of any industry, any company. So let's look at today's learnings. What are we going to take home today from this session? We're going to look at what is the need for training at an international level, what are the areas of training, and how an organization develop leaders who can manage global roles. So like I said, we are going to look at training, but training from an international context. This is the structure of the chapter today. We are going to look at a need for training in international assignments, cultural adjustment that the individual needs to go through, cross-cultural training methods. So what are the different training methods most popular, most commonly used in the industry today? Impact of cross-cultural training, the role of HR in an expat training, developing leaders to manage global roles, and then we are going to summarize the whole thing again. So coming to why the training is required, the need for training in an international assignment. So out of the six, out of the total international assignments, around 6% of the assignments fail. So though the percentage looks less, if you convert these 6% into numbers, they are really, really huge. And moreover, the matter of concern is this 6% has come, this number 6 has come up with a raise of 2%. So somewhere in 2011 it was only 4% and it has increased to 6% now. So that's kind of alarming situation. Now let's look at what are the factors leading to the failure of these assignments. The first and foremost here, which 19% of the people respond, that the assignment has failed because employee left the company for some other assignment to join some other company. So if you remember the session which we conducted on managing performance and how delicate and sensitive we need to be to appraise or to manage the performance of an expat, only reiterates the fact that that is really important aspect, and one has to be really, really careful in managing the performance of an expat. Amongst the top three reasons, first is obviously the need of the employee to look for different assignment. The other top two reasons are related to the family, the spouse or partner dissatisfaction, or family concerns. So a lot of expats, when they come overseas for a long-term assignment, they prefer to come with their family, with the spouse and the children. So a lot of times adjustment of the family with the new environment really becomes difficult. Or there are other family concerns which pushes the the expat to really quit the role and either change the company or go back to the home country. Reasons for premature return assignments, again here the same thing we spoke about, the family concerns. In some cases it was early completion of the assignments. So this percentage, as I said, though they look good in terms, though they look less in terms of numbers, they are really huge. What happens when this when an expat fails, or when an expat goes back to the home country, or when an expat leaves the company and join some other company. The most important factor is twofold. One is definitely the financial factor. When a company decides to send the expat to a employee to a foreign country, it spends at least three times of his domestic salary, 3 years of his domestic salary in the first year of the expat to settle down. The obvious other reason is that the business takes a backseat and there is a huge crisis which can come up in the business because the expat leaving the organization. In spite of all of that, there are a few companies, there are certain companies who do not engage into the training and orientation of expats in a foreign country. Due to this reason, the expat and the family is not prepared to go through the cultural shock, to go through the change, change of habits or what to expect in a foreign country, because they are not prepared. This failure comes. The relocation, Brookfield Global Relocation Trend Report shows that 81% of the companies provided cross-cultural training. So in spite of 81% of the companies providing the cross-cultural training, the historical average being 80% of the companies providing cross-cultural training, there are cases of failure and that percentage is quite alarming. So slide talks about the companies where cross-cultural preparation was offered on all assignments. 60% provided training for the entire family and 27% of the international assignee and spouse and 8% for the employees alone. So it says that a lot of companies these days are training not only the respective employee who is supposed to be traveling, but involves his or her family into the training so that it becomes a complete training package for the entire family and the family is ready to move. Effectiveness of cross-cultural training, so when the employees who underwent this training or orientation with their families were asked about their feedback, 39% of them said that it was of a great value and 46% of them said that it was of a good value. So that put together comes to around 70-80% of the people responding very positively to the training and orientation that was offered to them by their respective organization. A quick check on what we have seen till now. Many expat assignments see early termination due to what? We just looked at this. Inability of the expat to perform, or family or spouse issues, or organization being unhappy with the expat performance. So we saw that family and spouse issues were amongst the top three reasons for the spouse to terminate his assignment before time. Majority of the organizations offer training only to the expat, to the expat and spouse, to the entire family. So we just, the last slide, we saw that many of the organizations let the entire family go through the training so that there are fewer issues when the employee lands with his family in a foreign country. We looked at the need for training in international assignment. We saw how the assignment or the assignee really fails if he does not go through the appropriate training and orientation sessions. We also looked at the reasons why that happens. Now let's look at what is cultural adjustment. So when an employee who is sent to a foreign country on a long-term assignment, an expat will in most cases need time to adjust to a new circumstances. In many cases, expat brings his or her spouse, the children, and since the family will live in the country just as long as the expat, the whole family will have to go through this adjustment of general environment and learn how to interact with the host nationals. So this is a typical U curve. So cultural adjustment that we are talking about, the research says that while doing this cultural adjustment, a person or an expat goes through a U-shaped kind of an experience. So what is this U-shape all about? Let's look at this. It says that it all starts with a honeymoon period, which means a hunky-dory and a cozy period where the expat is really comfortable with the situation, with the environment, which takes a deep and he gets into a cultural shock, then he has to raise to the adjustment and finally to the mastery level. So let's look at how this works in detail. The honeymoon phase, as I said, very important person would often be met with great respect. So when an expat comes to host country, he is welcomed with a lot of warmth, a lot of respect, a lot of honor. The host country is keen to offer the best that is available with them, the best experiences, the best food, the best cultural experiences. Like they say, this phase is often called honeymoon and only lasts for until the individual starts the experience of day-to-day life. This is also termed sometimes as a tourist phase or a spectator phase, where the expat who has come mostly is engaged in outdoor activities, in looking at different places around, taking a feel of how it looks like, how the foreign people are. So he is not really active in this phase. He is just in a phase where he is observing and absorbing whatever is coming forth. Also, the host country people are more keen to give him the best experience in terms of his cultural understanding, food, political scenario, it could be geography. He will get to see the best places around. So really a honeymoon period where the start point is the culture shock, the next level. So here we saw the honeymoon period was at the peak and then it comes down to a culture shock. So what a culture shock means? So the moment the person comes into the work frame and starts interacting with people, starts understanding the depth and nuances of how things work here, what are the cultural differences, how communication is different, how the political and geographical scenario is different, how the market is responding differently to the same policies, processes and approaches which the home country used to use. So the cultural shock that he has to really go through, the reasons why cultural shock happens are many, but they are they can be concluded as combination of these factors, combination of factors like stress as a result of feeling obliged to many adjustments. So apart from the environment at work, there are a lot of other personal reasons why the person would go through a low time. That would include him being missing his family, becoming homesick, missing his friends, missing the kind of food that he used to have or the environment that he used to or she used to live in. So all of that really sums up into raising the stress level of an individual. The culture shock phase is a part of normal process that a majority of expats experience. When experienced expats who have been on many international assignments before, so even if the expat has the experience of being assigned in different countries around the world, even if he is an experienced expat, it is very much possible that in a particular country he goes through this cultural shock phase and really struggles to come out of it. What may start as a minor thing, so from family perspective, what could be a dip for a family or a culture shock for family? So right from simple things like schooling, language, transportation for children, food habits of the children, the cultural adjustment of the children, the environmental adjustment for the spouse of the children. So those are the things which if a family is going through, it definitely has an impact on the expat himself and reflects on his work. Sadly, some people never leave the culture shock phase and stay hostile towards the host nationals throughout the time of the assignment. Other people who learn to cope with these kind of cultural shocks have good training or orientation where the family knows what kind of what to expect in a foreign land, is able to cope up with the shock and is able to come out of it and adjust with the new environment. So adjustment phase, that's where the adjustment phase starts. For the expats too who decide to stay, a long period of adaption can be expected, usually referred to as adjustment phase. So if an employee and his family has gone through a rigorous training and orientation program, if they know what to expect the first time when they experience what is to be expected, there is definitely a downturn or slowdown, a movement of irritation or frustration in their lives. However, because they are mentally prepared to cope up and know the ways and means to cope up with these cultural shocks, they finally get into an adjustment phase where they try to adjust either the environment or themselves with what's happening around. A good way to cope with this situation is to learn the local language. If the entire language learning is difficult, at least picking up a few words here and there, understanding the slang language, using certain commonly used words, laughing off at things, which are beyond your capacity to absorb or understand, are some of the lighter ways how you can really adjust to the new culture. So here it says, even though the adjustment process has started, a lot of the feelings and experiences from the culture shock still remain, which makes it difficult to draw a clear line between the two phases. So there's definitely a time where you are not able to distinguish between a honeymoon period to a culture shock to adjustment phase. But yeah, those are the moments where one needs to bring in the orientation programs. The final phase in the U curve, so if we have looked at this U curve, so we looked at the honeymoon phase, we saw how culture shock happens, what do individuals need to do at the adjustment phase, and how a training and orientation program can be as important for an expat and his family to raise from a cultural shock to adjustment level. So once you have adjusted to the new environment, you come to a phase which is called mastery phase, where typically you are aware of what is expected from the environment, what is expected from your role. Your spouse and your family has already adjusted to the new environment, and they have not just adjusted but they have adapted to the new environment. The individual's cultural skills may develop further, but are at this stage sufficient to function without feeling of anxiety or discomfort. So it says this slide, it talks about the reasons that there are two types of complete adjustment. One that is more complete than the other. When the assignment is finished, the expatriate may miss the culture and the people so much that it will be difficult time to readjust to the home country. So yes, this does happen, that if you are living in a country for a longer time and if you have mastered the level of adjustments that are required to operate flawlessly in a new environment, when you actually and operate in such an environment for a long duration, when you actually go to the home country, you really find it difficult to adjust in your home country. So the U curve, several variations of the U curve exist. We have seen how the U curve works, and there are other management gurus which have spoken about W-shaped curve or a J-shaped curve. So here they are talking about the W-shaped curve, and here they are talking about J-shaped curve, where they are suggesting that unlike in the U curve, where the honeymoon period is extended, sometimes expats do not get to experience that honeymoon period, and they are on the ground reality right from the day one. So either it is a very small term phase or it doesn't exist at all. So having said that, there are a lot of other thoughts around how, what kind of experiences expats go through. However, having said that, U-curve is the most commonly accepted as well as a model that exists today. So when we spoke about dimensions, we spoke about adjustments that the expat and his family has to go through, various level of adjustment. So at what all levels does the do these people have to go through adjustment? There are four things that we are talking about in this presentation. One is self-oriented adjustment. The other is others-oriented adjustment. There is a perpetual adjustment and there is a cultural toughness dimension of adjustment phase. So let's look at self-oriented adjustments to start with. What is a self-oriented adjustment? The adjustment that you need to do within yourself. So there could be things like your habits, like your language skills, like the way you like to function, the way you like to put things across. There are a lot of these self-oriented things, your technical skills, your functional skills, the way you conduct yourself in a leadership role, the way you prefer to do a leadership role. All of that might need a orientation or a So here, for stress reduction, for technical competence, there are various things that a person will, have to go, have to change in his or her own self. So that's self dimension. Others or other oriented dimension, which speaks about relationship development, which simply is the activities that build friendship with people in a new culture. So the adjustment that you need to do with others will really help you to master the adjustment level. Willingness to communicate, it is not necessarily the level of language, but like we spoke some time back, that you can really learn to use those typical slang language words, which will make the environment very light. Perpetual dimension, these are the skills that are necessary to understand foreign behavior and to predict future behavior of a host national. That reduces tension in the cross-cultural relation and foster adjustment to the local conditions. So that is perpetual dimension. And the last, the cultural toughness dimension. The cultural toughness dimension or cultural novelty describes the differences in cultural distances. The gender, especially when if it is a lady expat, for her to adjust to the cultural differences might be slightly more difficult or might take slightly more time than a male expat. Though some of the books quote that the real time experience is that there is no major real difference between the adjustment that a female and a male needs to go through. But yes, there can be certain dimensions that we probably have to adhere to. The only non-individual dimension thus explains that countries with a large cultural distance in a relation to the expat's home country simply are tougher to get adjusted to. So those are the four dimensions which we spoke about: self-oriented, others-oriented, perpetual, and cultural toughness dimension. So these dimensions one has to really get oriented to raise from adjustment level to mastery level. A quick check on what we have seen so far. Choose the correct options for this. Oberg suggests that when an expat is really well adjusted to the host culture, he may still not perform as well as he would in his home culture. He may have a difficult time readjusting to his home culture. He may have a challenging time at the host country. So we have looked at this, and the answer is obviously B. The culture shock is the period of adaption, known A, period of adaption, B, known to cause anxiety, irritability, and feeling of helplessness, or C, the happy and fascinating problem-free period. We have seen what cultural shock it takes you really through a lot of anxiety and irritability. So now let's look at what are the different cross-cultural training methods. Didactic training, this form of training is the most popular and most commonly used form of training, where 2/3 of the MNCs use this kind of training format for the expats and his or her family. Basically, in this form of training, this is a typical school or university kind of training format, where a lot of information is downloaded to the people who are going through this training program or orientation program. So basics like the communication, what can cause a communication gap, or what are the cultural differences, how you know the schooling happens, or what kind of school would be best for the children, what are the dress code norms, what are the cultural norms, how does the shopping happen, what you would get in the host country, what you would not get, what kind of food would you not get in the host country. So those kind of information download happens in this didactic training. It indicates, or it represents a very traditional way of learning. However, this is most common and most accepted and appreciated form of training. The content of didactic training, like I said, is often based on hard facts, like how the travel would happen, what about the insurances, the visa processing, the shopping, what to expect when you get down, and all those administrative stuff, as well as cultural and the things that the expat and his family would require the U-shape that we looked at. So from how to travel from a shock state to adjustment state and finally to the mastery state. So all those things that they require to understand or know are covered in this training. But a didactic form of training, like I said, is typically a very pen and pencil kind of a training. Unlike experiential training. Now in experiential training, the whole focus is not just to give the intellectual experience, but the actual real life experience to the participants. So what happens here is, a lot of times there are simulation experiences, there are role reversal experiences, there are practical experiences, workshops that are conducted to make the participants familiar with the real time world in a host country. So there are examples where the company sends the bunch of expats with their families to the host country to get the first hand feel of what it looks like, etc. However, this kind of orientation is really difficult for a lot of companies, because of the cost that is involved in this kind of experiences. Also, sometimes the problem can, sometimes when you are coming for a short-term assignment, the kind of experience that you would go through would not be the similar experience which you would otherwise go through when you are here to stay for a longer term. The next form of training is the attribution training. And now, what is attribution training? Attribution training tries to give the expatriate skills in thinking and acting as a host national. So it is aimed at giving the expat an insight into the cultural point of view in the host country. This enables the expat to explain and understand the host national behavior. By teaching such skills, the aim is to make the expat's attributes more isophemeric to the new culture. So those are the points of attribution training. Moving on. One of the most important training, the language training. So like we spoke some time back, though the complete vocabulary or fluency in a foreign language is very difficult to come, and even if it comes, it might take months or years to master that language. However, certain understanding of the basic language is something very important, understanding the gestures in one of the sessions which we conducted earlier on culture understanding, when we where we saw this means very good in India, it means zero in some other country, and in a country like Brazil it really means an insult. So those kind of cultural orientation, language orientation, both in terms of spoken language and body language, this training aims to take the participants through. Language barriers can prevent, so why this? Because language barriers can prevent the expat from processing information posted in local languages. So if the expat is on his own in the host country, he should be able to understand the general postings and the general posts that are put up in local languages. The cultural awareness training, something very obvious. Again, in cultural awareness training, the goal is to make him or her understand what kind of cultural differences to expect in a host country. Training activities here include self-awareness building and value ranking charts, but the goals can also be reached with more culture general approaches such as simulation games and perpetual exercises. So here you can either take a didactic form of training method or a experiential form of training method. Other methods here also includes role plays and self-assessment. So we spoke about this form of training in experiential training method. Interaction training. The method of interaction training is based on the interactions between the new expats and expats with more experience of the local culture. So if there is a if there is a company where they have posted an expat and who has been for a long time in the host country, and if it is a time for that expat to go back, the companies really look for a relap between the the stint of both the expats, where one expat can kind of transfer the knowledge to the new expat, which helps him to settle down in the new environment in a very less period. So this is where it talks overlaps in expat placements are sometimes used training methods. So though these are not very very formal form of training methods, but yes, they can be they can be formalized in terms of making it woven in the process or practices or policies of the company. The benefits with overlaps include the possibility to explain tasks, introduce contacts, and otherwise coach in the management and operation of the workplace. Families can also benefit in a similar way from interacting with the outgoing family. Cognitive behavior modification. This method is among the less used training methods when training an expat. The expat get to name what activities find rewarding, did he find rewarding or punishing in the home culture context. So something very very uncommon. However, if it is built into the different methods of training that we saw, the didactic or the experiential learning, especially the experiential learning, if we wove cognitive behavior modification kind of a training in experiential learning, it would really help the people who are getting the orientation. So because here the expat who has been in the host country really comes and talks about what are the rewarding and punishing experiences that he or she went through. By making such distinctions, the expat can hopefully apply the same process in the host country, the one who is going through the orientation. So kind of a quick check on what we looked at till now. The most common method of cross-cultural training given in classical culture lecture form. So we have looked at it, didactic training. Attribution training gives expat skills in what? Technical competence, thinking and acting, or raising awareness about the host culture. We have seen this thinking. Attribution training is about thinking and acting like a host national.